So welcome to Marcus, Marcus Cauchy. Marcus is London's first Sandler Institute sales trainer. And I have to say that Marcus's sales training techniques are very unorthodox. A lot of people wouldn't like Marcus's approach. He's confronting, he throws and tears apart some of the old myths about sales techniques. But you have to say Marcus's results count. Marcus has trained over 3,000 management and has over 400 sectors who've increased their profit between 100% and 1,100%. So you really got to look at the results. So Marcus, welcome.
Thank you.
And what we want to focus on today is really what people can do for the start of 2007. Most people will be starting the new year with all sorts of New Year's resolutions, either personal or business. And I'm pretty sure that the business resolutions will be around how can I get more clients. So can I put that to you as a first question? What would you say are some of the fastest ways that some of our listeners can attract new clients in 2007?
Okay, well, the first thing is to be honest with yourself. Stop lying to yourself and telling yourself that you're being efficient and effective. One of the first things you can do is identify how operationally efficient you are with respect to sales. What I mean by this is, do you spend your time pretending to do business development? Do you spend your time getting ready to get ready? So first thing is look at your list. Who's on the list? Who are your customers? Who have you sold to in the past, and can you sell anything to them again? Quickest way of generating business, sell to who's bought from you already, and it's a lot cheaper. It's between 1/5 and 1/9 of the cost. So start with that. Next thing is get yourself into the frame of mind that you're in business to sell, to make a profit, to go to the bank. You're not in business to be loved. So get on with it, get out there and prospect.
So what do you mean when you say stop pretending to do business development? What do you mean by pretending to do?
People spend their time shuffling bits of paper around, sending out emails, talking to people who are very nice to them but weren't quite saying no to them. And as a result of that, they spend a huge amount of wasted effort talking to non-prospects, people who are just fishing for information, doing follow-up calls with deadbeats and no-hopers who are scratching their backsides and not really wanting to do anything.
Well, I guess it's comfortable that way.
It is, but they're not qualifying, they're not going to the bank. They feel they can an activity. Being active is one thing. Taking action and going after genuine prospects, disqualifying the deadbeats, disqualifying the non-prospects early, is one of the most important things you can do. And principally, the first rule in Sandler is do the behavior. Are you cold calling? Are you prospecting? Are you going out and meeting enough prospects? If your pipeline is full of proposals that don't turn into anything, if you've sent out quotes and people aren't buying, if you're investing a huge amount of time and effort on activities that don't generate cash, the one constant in all those dissatisfying relationships is you. So look to yourself, look to your behaviour.
What would you say that you were talking about looking at existing clients and the cost effectiveness it is of actually extending the work that you're doing with existing clients? I mean, I was thinking of a large number of listeners to this might be people who are in the consulting or coaching profession. Do you have a view about what those people can do to extend their business?
Yeah, I mean, the mistake people make is they think that they've got a list of, say, 10,000 contacts or 1,000 contacts or even 100 contacts. Of those, who are the people who spend? Identify what makes them spend, what compels them to spend, what sort of things they bought in the past, and what you've got that's similar but different that you could sell to them again, so that you're constantly building the relationship with those people. HP a couple of years ago cut their marketing budget from $300,000 to $10,000, and the education marketing manager had to generate business on the back of it, still hitting increased targets. She, by going back to those people who bought something within 8 years, and she sold them something similar but different, and she increased revenues by 130%. So the mistake people make is that they think that they've got to hunt for new business. They don't, more often than not. Going back to old customers is a great way to start. If you're going to hunt for new business, prospect carefully, qualify thoroughly, and disqualify people who are not going to buy. And if you listen to people like Jay Abraham, he talks about gathering the herd, and Dan Kennedy, these are some big names in marketing. They really do know their stuff. They're good direct response marketeers. And what they do is they keep whittling their list down so that they'll identify people who are loyal, and instead of spending, you know, $10 or £20 or whatever, they're people who spend $1,000 a year. And so find the people who have the intention, the will to spend, who buy the products and services that you have to offer.
Do you think that applies? And do you think that applies equally to the business-to-consumer market as well as the B2B market, Marcus?
Absolutely. If you look at people out there, people like Jay Abraham, Jay Levinson, Dan Kennedy, Fraser Hay, all these people, they sell routinely to the business-to-consumer market. And what they're very good at is farming their list. It's the most important asset. People come night after paperclips. The mistake people make is that they don't look after or work their customer data. They don't contact people who bought from them or who've given them permission to market to them. And they have a tendency to steal time, steal their goodwill, rather than constantly seek permission to market more and keep upselling. And I think if you're a one-trick pony, you're never going to really develop a business. You might deal, but you're never really going to develop a business. And the way to develop a business is have lots of product that you can keep selling. So, you know, entry level, £0 or $10, then, you know, $10 or $25, and then $50, then $100, then $150, $250, and just keep growing them so that you're spending a little bit more each time. And invest heavily in your customers.
One thing I know, having attended some of your briefings, that one thing that has struck me, and I know strikes many people when they listen to you speak, is the different approach you have to that sales meeting. And many people have, you know, whether it's a sales meeting appointment or whether they're a coach or a consultant and they give away a free assessment that first time round, is how you tailor that free assessment to really confront the prospect and almost sort of take the business away from them as a powerful technique there.
It's your job in the sale to gather information, not to give it. The mistake people make when they're trying to sell, whether it's business to business or business to consumer, is they're constantly trying to prove their credentials. They do this by coming along, doing a presentation, dog and pony show, telling them how long they've been in business, who their customers are, how much turnover they've got, who their investors are. No one cares. What customers care about is themselves. So spend time really applying. If you haven't read it, the Stephen Covey book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, habit 5 is seek first to understand, then to be understood. And that's what a good salesperson does. They listen, they question, they gather data, and they use that information to uncover pain. 70% of buying decisions are away from, so moving away from some type of pain. Only 30% tend to move towards, and even those, there's normally a pain underlying it.
I know you've worked, as I said earlier, with sort of over 3,000 people across 400 sectors. I mean, there must be some stories there, Marcus, of people who've perhaps their start point, as a number of people might be in the new year, is from a fairly low base and saying, look, I really want to go for it this year. This is the year it's all going to change for me. I mean, what would you say to somebody in that position who's really wanting to go all out in 2007 to make it the most profitable year yet?
Two things need to happen. First of all, you need to be aware that you have a problem. And the second thing is that you have to be in a position where you hate what's happening to you. It's all fine and dandy saying that you're committed. So I would question the commitment of almost anybody I talk to. Mm. I would deny that they're serious. I would deny that they're committed. And in the context of the New Year's resolutions, I'd also say that in that. Mm. Because you need to test their commitment, you need to test whether they fight for their pain. And I'm working with an advertising agency at the moment 30 years in the business, hit the doldrums, really couldn't work his way out of it. In 7 weeks after investing £2,000 with me, he's made £90,000 back. And he was pitching a piece of work that he was going to go in at £3,000. He got £15,000 for it. And it was all by applying some very basic principles, doing the basics well, qualifying, finding out what the pain is so that you can establish a value rather than selling on cost. Mm. He established that there was a value to what he was doing. And the result of that was that the buyer fought his corner, took it to the chief executive and got the £12,000 worth of budget. Now, he was in control. The other thing that I teach to do upfront contracts. Now, an upfront contract is a way of being able to absolutely be certain what happens next at the end of every interaction. And the reason why most sales people and why most sellers fail is they have absolutely no control and no clear idea what's going to happen next. And one of the most important rules that I teach is that you can never blame a prospect for doing something to you you never said they couldn't do. Now, what this means is that if you don't tell them that they can't ask for a proposal, or they can't think it over, or that they can't mess you around, or that they can't ask for a discount, and they do, it's your own fault.
Mm.
They don't make it clear what happens next when they put these contracts in place, and most of them don't do them in the first place. But if you don't tell a prospect at the end of this meeting, this is what's going to happen. We're going to talk about your budget. We're going to find out exactly where the budget's going to it is, who releases it, who decides who's involved in making the decision, you know, what sort of timescale is he working towards, and you don't take away their permission to think it over, and you don't give them permission to say no to you. Prospects are afraid. Prospects are never afraid of you if you tell them what's going to happen to them, but they're constantly terrified. If anyone listening does a game of word association, and I use the word salesperson, what's the first word that comes to your mind? I don't suppose it's something warm and fluffy like helpful, beneficial, you know, useful, has my interests at heart. It's normally something like pushy, arrogant, greedy, plaid-wearing, you know, snake oil, and all of this sort of stuff. Now, if you have that perception as sellers, imagine what customers have or prospects have of you. So you've got to take the time and trouble to understand the customer.
I think that's one of the key points that people really struggle with when working with your approach, because it is a real sort of 360-degree turn, isn't it, really, for people to actually to get rid of the fear of actually being that open and honest and upfront with people. And it is that. It's not about being arrogant. It's not about being pushy. It's just about being open with the prospect.
It's about knowing, as a seller, you have rights. The devil's greatest trick was convincing the human race he didn't exist, and customers have done the same. They've convinced the sellers that the customer is king. He's not. He's your equal at best. Mm-hmm. He has a problem. You have the solution. And there's no point trying to pussyfoot around. If he's got a cancer, there's no point putting a sticking plaster on it. You've got to be direct and honest with him. But buyers don't like being messed around. They don't like to waste their time. And very often they'll put bill prevention solutions in place, like bids and tenders and beauty parades and all of that in place to help eliminate their chance of making a mistake. But actually, a good salesperson can sell through that. I routinely teach people how to do that. I've got a client who sells into the public sector. They sold their way onto a tender list which was meant to be closed. They got everyone else to do their proposals, and they came in at five times everyone else's price and won it. Now, these are web architects. They're not notorious for their sales skill. Everyone else bid between 25 and 35,000. These guys walked away with a £120,000 deal. And they never once showed their product. This is the other thing. Everyone can't wait to show their product. Do the presentation, but come along, wave the product under the prospect's nose in the vain hope that quality is going to win out. Quality doesn't matter. It only has to make do. Don't buy quality. If they did, forgive me, McDonald's, and this is allegedly so that you don't see me, but did McDonald's make the best burgers in the world? Coke make the best cola in the world? British Airways, the best airline in the world. My guess is, based on my own customer experience, no. But they sell a hell of a lot more than everyone else.
I mean, one of the points you made just a few minutes ago as well was about selling on your value rather than the cost.
Yeah.
And that, again, is something that I've seen a lot of people shy away from. I mean, they're always saying, well, I can't possibly charge X for my time. But really, how do you go working with somebody to help them to really understand what their value is?
It's not what you perceive the value to be that really matters, although that is important, because mentally, sales is a game, and it's nine-tenths mental. It's about your psyche being strong enough to be brave. We have a rule which is be brave 5 seconds at a time. And what I mean by that is you have to be able to say, ask a difficult question or say the difficult statement, and then hush up and let the other person say their piece. Now, the way you do it is by getting the customer to see the value. And the way you do that is through uncovering their pain. It's not by trying to demonstrate your competence or your excellence or your quality. It's about trying to understand what keeps the customer awake at night, what frustrates them, what scares them, what worries them. And a lot of people say this is manipulative, but frankly, if you look at how buyers work and the system that they use, then it's nowhere near as manipulative as that. If you look at the buyer system, a salesperson will try to qualify. The buyer's equivalent of that is lying. They'll then present, at which point the customer will steal. How many of you have gone out there pre-competing? Given your best ideas, then documented it in the form of a proposal. You try and close, they throw out some type of mislead, like I need to speak to my boss, my dog, my lawyer, my accountant, or they'll throw out an objection like you're too expensive, I've heard it all before, you don't sound any different, prove to me that you're worth the money. And then they get you to write a proposal where you document all of your best ideas together with your confidential pricing. They ship it around town to all of your competitors, and your ideas end up in their proposition while they go into hiding. I don't suppose any of you have ever found yourself in voicemail jail. Unlimited access to voicemail.
So
buyers are hideously manipulative. Bids and tenders have been put in place to prevent people from selling because they know that the people in the buying organization are weak-willed and can't make a decision unemotionally. And it's an emotional game. You've got to sell emotion. If you're trying to deal adult to adult, you're going to get eaten alive. You've got to address the prospect's child personality and get them emotional. Get them throw their toys out the pram, get them angry, get them upset, whatever it is. But you've got to take them to an emotional point where they're frustrated with where they are and they hate it enough to do something about it. Otherwise, you're just going to be one of the thousands of people. You're one decision in 250 that some poor managing director has or one consumer has. I mean, how many adverts do we get hit with every day? Tens of thousands. And you're just one decision in all of that. You've got to cut through all the noise and take people out of trance long enough to be able to make a decision.
And you can find emotion in anything that you're trying to...
Almost anything. I mean, it'd be probably easier to illustrate it with a role play. I mean, if you take an issue that you're concerned with, Elaine, well, pick anything.
Me personally or my prospective clients?
Sorry, say again?
Would that be me personally or my prospective clients?
Yeah, all prospective clients, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, prospective clients, I mean, I guess because we're dealing with health, that is something that people do get very emotional about.
What sort of issue would they normally pick?
Would be weight loss, might be one of them.
Okay, well, Elaine, you're the prospect now, or you're the prospective client. Elaine, I hear you want to fix your weight issue, but why would you want to do that?
Well, I've been on diet after diet, and I've managed to lose the weight, but as time's gone on, I've put it back on again.
I come across this a lot. Happens all the time. People go on diets, and then they yo-yo, and they end up probably putting on a bit more weight than they'd originally lost. Why do you think that happens to you?
Oh, I don't know. I'm obviously not dealing with something, right? I mean, it works for me, but I can do it for a while, but maybe I've got lack of willpower. Maybe that's what it is.
I'm not convinced it's lack of willpower, because a lot of people have an enormous amount of will to sustain a diet for a period of time. But they end up in the same situation time and time again. Why do you really think that you're unable to sustain the weight loss?
It doesn't sort of fit with my lifestyle, really. I mean, I can't be on this diet forever when I'm dashing about and I've got meetings and meals out with clients. You know, it's just impossible.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, I come across this a lot. People are busy, they're committed to their business, committed to their family life and so forth, and they're trying to balance all of this. Why do you think that your lifestyle precludes you from being able to lose weight?
Well, it's just that, really. I don't have time to prepare my own meals. I've just got to grab something that's a takeaway or a prepared meal. I don't have time to cook.
How do you feel about the fact that your lack of ability to control when and how you eat is keeping you piling on the weight?
Well, I don't feel good about it, because I'm sure it's affecting me in other ways as well. You know,
okay. Well, how long has that been going on for?
Probably, it must be about the last 5 years or so.
Okay, and what have you tried to do to fix it?
Well, I've tried diet after diet and been fine for a while, but it's come back on again.
Okay. I'm getting the sense you've almost given up trying to fix it.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I've had enough of it, really. Part of me thinks it's never going to work.
Okay, I mean, in terms of, have you used dietitians or gone to doctors or coaches or anything like that?
I've done the usual thing, you know, the swimming club thing, group
okay.
thing.
Well, when you spoke to the people who ran the swimming club and you told them you weren't happy with the outcome that you were getting, what did they say?
Well, I don't think I've actually gone back and told them that that's the case.
Sorry, say again?
I've not been back to them and told them that that's the case.
Right, okay. Now, I'm kind of confused. I mean, it sounds like you've invested a huge amount of effort and a lot of emotion and a lot of time in this. What were you hoping I could help you do?
Well, I'm hoping that this will be something different. You know, this is going to be the one that really I can succeed with.
Well, you know, I'm not entirely sure that I can do that. I can only guarantee one bit of it, which is I can give you the program. And again, how do I tell you something that might upset you without offending you?
Just do it, Marcus. Just tell me.
Okay. The problem I've got is that when I deal with people who have described the situation, the symptoms, if you like, of what you've described, they're not always committed. They're not always committed to doing what's necessary in order to sustain the weight loss. Achieving the weight loss is relatively simple. In my experience, I've never had food pass my lips by accident. It's never been the situation that being sat on the sofa, I've not done the exercise because I've chosen not to. So that side of things is pretty simple. The equation is more difficult where people aren't committed, and at a mental level, an emotional level, they really don't hate where they are enough to do something about it and sustain it. Now, convince me that you are.
Well, this would make me really want to convince you that I am, Marcus.
Yeah. So you see the process? What I've done?
Absolutely.
Just a self-discovery. Then I've challenged your thinking. I've pushed you gently and nurturingly through that process. But I've been very direct. I've confronted the reality, and I've understood the situation that you're going through, because I've seen it before. Mm. And I think the problem that most people have when they're trying to offer a solution is they're always offering pablum. If it's no problem, that's easy, diddle-diddle. And I don't think that's honest. I think that's manipulative.
Mm.
Selling people under false pretenses, it's just a lie, and that's going to come back to haunt you.
Mm.
I think if you give people the option of backing out, if you're direct with them, you tell them the pitfalls, you're very clear that one of the reasons why you will not want to work with me is because I'm very direct. I don't take prisoners. I don't let people hide behind excuses. And if they need to be confronted, I'll confront them.
Mm.
Now, are you absolutely certain that's the sort of regime you're willing to work with?
Yeah, I can see how people will want to come back for that, because what's coming across is your authenticity.
Yeah. The strangest thing, I mean, for me, I've been selling for 20, 25 years, however long, and I've now run, out of 20 qualified meetings, I've won all 20. Now, yeah, even for me, that's something of a minor miracle. I'm aiming for 50, and then it'll go to 100 or whatever. But the strangest thing has happened. The more direct, the more honest, the more confrontational I am, the more business I win. Mm. And prospects want that. They want to be directed. They want to be told it as it is. They don't want people to fib to them. They don't want to be misled. They just want to know what it's all about. And they're quite sophisticated. You know, gone are the days where you can close people. Gone are the days where you can handle their objections. You're just unqualified to do all of that. They have to do it all. They have to close themselves. They have to handle their own objections. They have to discover for themselves their reason why. Because there's no point, you know, prospects never argue with their own data. Now, if we go through that role play, you gave me all that information. You can't deny it because it's your data. If I'd told you the reason why you can't lose weight alone is because you're yo-yo dieting, because you don't sustain it, your lifestyle sucks, blah, 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 you're going to fight me.
Yeah.
Now, this way, you don't fight me. So both of us are aiming for the same objective. I want to help you. You want to lose the weight and sustain it. And both of us are focused on you.
Great.
And the problem, I think, with most salespeople is they play the game of the big I am, where they try and demonstrate how wonderful and competent they are, when actually no one but them cares.
Mm. Well, can we finish, Marcus, with a, perhaps if you can, come up with three most effective and easy to apply techniques that people can use to, in fact, double their business in 2007.
Yeah, rule one, go for the no. Always try and get people to say no to you. The more you do that, the less rubbish you have in your pipeline. So you're not wasting time, you're not wasting effort on people who are never going to buy. Second thing is always go for pain. And a lot of people have a problem with the term pain, so find cause, the why. You know, if you have a big enough why, people find the money from somewhere. So always go for pain. And the other thing that's really key, and this is probably the most important rule we teach in Soundly, is nurture, nurture, nurture.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going at it from the perspective that you're trying to make a fast buck, you're going into the meeting to make the sale, that's the wrong attitude. You've got to go in there with a genuine desire to deliver exactly what the prospect needs. And then it's bespoke. And what happens then is you can charge pretty much anything that you like because it's not off the shelf.
Mm.
They don't have the choice of just pulling it off the shelf and coming back to you 6 months from now.
Mm.
Everything is tailored to them. And that's where you can charge bespoke prices. My clients routinely see between 100 and 1100% growth. Their close rate goes up, but their fees go through the roof. When I first started doing this, I was up against incumbent providers of telemarketing services. And I would outsell them while the customer was happy with them, and I'd walk out with between 7 and 12 times their fee. As things stand at the moment, I've got clients now who've, 300% increase in revenues within a quarter. And they're controlling the whole process by, following the basic rules, just do the behavior. If I can add a fourth, prospect consistently. Always be prospecting. The 3 foot rule, if someone's within 3 foot, they look interesting, talk to them, find out what they do, who they are, see if they're a prospect or they know people. Prospect, the 3x9 rule is call 3 prospects before 9 o'clock because the gatekeeper's not there. Prospect after 5:30 because for the same reason, but 6 calls a day equates to over 1,200 cold calls a year. Now put money on it, the 99% of the audience listening don't do 1,200 calls in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Simple stuff.
Simple stuff. But I really want to thank you, Marcus, for the time you've spent this evening on this. And as I said at the beginning in the introduction, it may be unorthodox sales training techniques, but you've got to say, does it work? And I think what you've given us this evening is some great examples and proof that it does work.
And the truth is, most people who listen to it will hate it. They'll never do it, and they'll fight it down because it sounds so alien. Everyone else tells self-feature and benefit, always be closing, handle objections, always be positive. I go completely the opposite because I know it works, my clients know it works, it's so much more fun because you're actually getting results. And selling is the easiest job in the world if you know what you're doing. For most people, it's pure misery. It's 3 a.m. so at the end of the bed, wondering how you're going to pay off your credit cards because you just spent all of that money on groceries and you can't pay that off. Mm. So you're paying 30% APR on less services and less cafe.
Yeah. Well, there will be links to your website, Marcus, and how people can get in touch with you. So thanks again for your time. And maybe what I'm hoping will happen as we get the posting up on the site is that people will email us with questions, etc. So maybe you'd be prepared to come back if we get any questions as well.
Very happy to.
Great. Thanks very much, Marcus.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.